The time is 4 o'clock. This is locally controlled grassroots radio, WERU-FM, 89.9 Blue Hill and 102.9 Bangor. Stay tuned for Radioactive.
Radioactive, a grassroots environmental and social justice news journal with hosts Meredith DeFrancesco and Amy Brown. Today we'll be looking at the pending congressional passage of Fast Track Authority, a procedure which would allow the president to negotiate trade agreements without enforceable protections for the environment or workers' rights. We'll be talking with Jack McKay. But first, these updates.
The so-called anti-terrorism bill was passed in the House yesterday and may be passed by the Senate and sent to Bush for his signature in the next few days. This bill greatly expands the power of government agencies to spy on anyone they say they believe is a terrorist or who has ever supported anyone the government ever decides is a terrorist. In addition to concerns that the bill violates the Bill of Rights, critics cite concerns that the term terrorist is so vaguely defined. In fact, we were unable to find any reference to any definition of terrorism in anything we've read about the bill. To read the 122-page bill online, you can go to www.epic.org/privacy/terrorism. And in local news, yesterday the Bangor Peace and Justice Center delivered a petition with 1,200 signatures to the Bangor offices of Collins, Snow, and Baldacci and asked them to deliver it to Bush and to work with him to implement it. The petition urges Bush to, quote, bring those responsible for the terrorist attacks to justice while ensuring more innocent lives are not taken in an escalating cycle of violence, to protect innocent Arabs and Muslims from racist attacks, to defend civil liberties while promoting security, and to work for long-term peaceful solutions by addressing the root causes of violence, close quote. The Bangor Peace and Justice Center plans to hold a forum called What is Real Security on December 8th, and they ask anyone who would like to be involved in organizing or attending that to contact them at 942-9343. And there continue to be peace vigils in Bangor at the Federal Building every Tuesday from 5 to 6 p.m. and at the Blue Hill Town Hall on Sundays from 5 to 6 p.m. Please contact us with information about what's happening in your community. We'll give contact information later on.
According to the AFL-CIO, Fast Track, now being termed Trade Promotion Authority, is a procedure through which Congress gives the President authority to negotiate trade agreements and provide special rules for considering those agreements. Fast Track was in effect from 1975 until 1994. During this time, Fast Track Authority outlined negotiating objectives for U.S. trade negotiators, limited the time Congress could debate and consider legislation to implement trade agreements after they had been completed by the President, and required an up or down vote on implementing legislation with no congressional amendments allowed. The President can negotiate trade agreements without fast-track authority, but he then has to let Congress debate the agreement at length and possibly add amendments that would modify the agreement. A broad coalition of unions and labor, consumer, environmental, and fair trade groups helped to defeat attempts to reinitiate Fast Track in 1997 and 1998 and remain avid in their struggle as Congress currently considers another vote. Concerns about Fast Track and the trade agreements it would initiate include the lack of congressional power and the absence of attention to the environment and workers' rights. The AFL-CIO, a forerunner in Fast Track resistance, has said, quote, flawed trade policies cost American jobs, put downward pressure on U.S. wages and working conditions, erode the ability of governments to protect public health and the environment, and have contributed to political and economic instability and growing inequality in the rest of the world, end quote. The current administration wishes to use the Fast Track Authority for the passage of the FTAA, the Free Trade Area Agreement, for negotiating additional bilateral free trade agreements, and for new World Trade Organization negotiations. House Ways and Means Committee Chair Bill Thomas said last week he is aiming for approval before next month's ministerial of the WTO in Qatar. We have with us today in the studio Jack McKay, president of the Central Labor Council of Bangor, organizer for PICA, and has worked on trade and employment issues for the past 11 years, including at the National Labor Committee. Welcome, Jack, to the program.
Thank you. It's a real pleasure to be here.
Thank you. So why don't we jump in and if you could give us an idea about what Fast Track is and its significance in global trade agreements.
Fast track is incredibly important to the administration right now. Congressman Thomas from California has introduced a piece of legislation which has passed the Ways and Means Committee on a very partisan vote. Democratic legislators who normally vote for free trade issues, in fact, voted against it. And it's now in the House where if the Republican Party believes that it has the votes for it, it will come up for vote any day now. Fast track is incredibly important for the trade issues that the trade agreements that we've seen in the past, for instance, for NAFTA, North American Free Trade Agreement, which is a trade agreement between the United States, Mexico, and Canada. One of the interesting things about the strategy that the administration is using to win fast track approval is that they are using the events of September 11th as their strategy to win this. The administration's top trade negotiator, Robert Zoellick, who's the director of the United States Trade Representative Office, said in an op-ed, and I quote, "On September 11th, America, its open society, and its ideas came under attack by a malevolence that craves our panic, retreat, and abdication of global leadership. This president and this administration will fight for open markets. We will not be intimidated by those who have taken to the streets to blame trade and America for the world's ills." And then he goes on to talk about how trade has been very good for people. So he's calling into question the people who have gone into the streets, like we saw in Seattle, where there are 50,000 people who demonstrated, or in Quebec, where there is another 50,000 people, or in Genoa. And he's seeming to imply that they're standing at the same side as the terrorists. So this is pretty underhanded politics at this stage to be using such flag-waving patriotism to pass this kind of a measure.
Great. NAFTA, the North American Free Trade Agreement, was passed when Fast Track still was in accordance, and you recently wrote an editorial in the Bangor Daily News that was underlining that NAFTA is a model for what we could expect if we do pass Fast Track again, mm-hmm. and the implementation of FTAA. Could you talk about that?
Well, I think that's a great example, because Robert Zoellick was seeming to imply that if people protest this, then they're on the same side or they're helping the terrorists, and he seems to think that people who have lost their jobs have no reason to protest, or that that's somehow unpatriotic. And I think that somebody who's lost their job because GM has decided to move to Mexico is actually, you know, exercising any rights that they should have and that they do in fact have. 260,000 jobs were certified as being lost under NAFTA. That's the government's own trade adjustment program for workers who lose their jobs due to NAFTA. General Motors is a fantastic example of a company which has relocated all its new manufacturing production to Mexico. General Motors is now the number one employer, private sector employer in Mexico. And so in 260,000 jobs, that's just direct jobs. There's also the suppliers and the other companies that are related to that, the other employment jobs. And the Department of Labor typically says that somewhere between 1.9 and 2.6 related jobs are linked into these manufacturing jobs. So the number is far higher in terms of jobs lost. And this is something that's not been good for the working class of the United States. Since 1990, if you look at the difference between workers' pay and the CEOs, the minimum wage, if the minimum wage had gone up at the same rate as the average compensation for CEOs, it'd be $24.13 an hour today, which would be pretty fantastic. But unfortunately, that's not been the reality. As companies have moved jobs, you know, good-paying manufacturing jobs to Mexico, where they pay a dollar an hour, or to other countries, they've been reaping incredible profits, which have been boosting their wages, but not been boosting, workers. They say that we receive the benefits when we go and shop at Walmart or other places, but that's a bit of a stretch.
What is the rationale that they use for fast track authority? Because it seems that the only thing it does is remove any supposed representation from the process. I mean, all right, once they pass these trade agreements, we all know, if we've been following this at all, no representation and nothing we can do, and decisions are made in secret tribunals. But before the trade agreements are passed, the only option or influence that the public has is through their representatives, and this takes the supposed, alleged representatives out of the picture and just allows the president to pass it through. So how do they rationalize that?
That's a good question of how they managed to get away with it. Through the debates of NAFTA, they continuously said that NAFTA will bring jobs, you know, that we're going to have a greater surplus with Mexico, and that exports of manufactured goods bring more jobs. When NAFTA was passed in 1994, we had a surplus with Mexico. Today we have a $35 billion deficit. It's a net loss of jobs. And every critique of NAFTA in terms of job loss, in terms of driving down working conditions and benefits in the United States, in terms of driving down working and other benefits in Mexico and Canada, as well as the border becoming more porous and becoming a site of transshipment of illegal drugs, as well as the impact on democracy, all those things came true. All of that came true, and I think the more these trade agreements are looked at, the more this type of production or economic system is looked at, it's just seen as really bad. You know, it's really bad for the majority of Americans. It's really bad for the majority of Mexicans. I mean, it's NAFTA's been a catastrophe in Mexico. Wages plummeted 40% in the first 2 years after NAFTA. In the country as a whole, it's still 20% down. In the maquila areas along the border,
the sweatshops,
that's the assembly plants.
The
free trade zones, that's right. You have the most advanced manufacturing facilities in the world. We're talking General Motors, Ford, AC Delco, General Electric, Westinghouse.
Walmart.
Well, Walmart does not have any manufacturing plants, but the companies that produce for Walmart, that are setting up here, and they're next to shacks. And the conditions there are absolutely horrible, where people, there's an incredible article in the New York Times a number of months ago about the water truck that goes around and gives people water, and a family who, you know, the wage earner works in AC Delco, I believe it was, they can only afford one jug of water a day, which means only a couple cups of water per family member. And at some points, the parents don't drink water. And these are the conditions that are in the shadow of these factories, again, the most advanced, capital-intensive factories in the world. So this is not a good deal for Mexico. A large part of the reason for the Zapatista revolt was the agricultural agreements, which have basically undercut the subsistence economy in Mexico. Corn is the number one producer. There are very small subsistence producers who could grow and feed themselves and feed their families. And with NAFTA, the tariffs are brought down, and suddenly they're competing. You know, a small farmer on a hillside is now competing against an agro-corp in Minnesota or Iowa, and he doesn't have a chance.
What's the impact been here in Maine? We've heard about some of the shoe workers losing jobs.
Yeah. Although that was not NAFTA, it's mostly the Caribbean Basin Economic Recovery Act, as well as some other shoe legislation in the 80s. In the Bangor area alone, 1,000 jobs went to free trade zones in the Dominican Republic. Companies like Bass Shoe, Timberland, Amfesco Industries, I think that was over in Brewer, Lowell Shoe and Bendy Shoe and Viner Brothers in Bangor. And so those jobs were lost, and the jobs that replaced them in the service industry simply didn't pay as much. You know, there's a tremendous ripple effect on the whole Bangor economy. I mean, people who work at Walmart don't go out and buy a house, where if you were making $10 in 1985 at a shoe job, you do. So there's an impact on the banks. There's an impact on all the way across. And it's in the Dominican Republic, the wages went from $1.33. See, this is one of the ironies of this whole trade agreement. They say that these types of trade agreements, they say that this is going to help out the people, you know, in Mexico and other places, you know, the corporations, especially Nike, who's very savvy at this sort of stuff, says, we're standing up for the people in the third world. We're really trying to help them out. And we're giving them jobs. We're making their lives better. And, but the truth is, in the Dominican Republic, the wages went from $1.33 down to 56 cents an hour in 10 years. And the same has been true in Mexico because they're being forced to compete against each other. They're told continuously, if you don't ratchet your wages down, we're moving to Guatemala or to China or the next place is Vietnam. And as soon as they start to sink their teeth into a job and make it better, the company's off to another place. One of the gurus of one of the gurus of Wall Street and a beloved child of Wall Street is Jack Welch, the former CEO of General Electric. And he, at a moment, sort of let out in an interview what his ideal factory was, and that was a factory that was on a barge. So they could just move it wherever it was best, wherever it was best for the company.
So in fact, the FTAA, the Free Trade Area Agreement, is an expansion of this NAFTA model, and we could expect more of this.
Absolutely, more of the same.
NAFTA on steroids.
Right. It's really incredible. One of the things that I'd just like to make sure that we touch on is, that's talked about the least. I mean, it's the Chapter 11 bankruptcy, which basically
Chapter 11's in NAFTA.
That's right. Thank you. Which basically says that if a government puts up certain regulations or certain laws, which stop a company from getting the profits it could have had, and they go to they set up a tribunal. For instance, the company will say, you know, the regulations against MMT, which is an additive, gasoline additive, they'll say that there was no scientific basis for the regulation, and it was done for just political reasons. They can take this to a tribunal, and the tribunal will make a ruling. So, for instance, the U.S. company Metalclad went to a NAFTA tribunal. They said that a Mexican government province had stopped them from opening a toxic waste dump, and that it had no scientific basis. So this tribunal, which is, you know, three people done in secret, overruled the Mexican government, and Mexican taxpayers were forced to pay $17 million. Right now there's the state of California, through extremely lengthy democratic process, passed a law against the gasoline additive MTBE. A Canadian corporation has sued the state of California, saying that there's no scientific basis to this, that it's in effect seizing the profits that it would have had, and it's suing for $1 billion, the Canadian corporation Methanex. And again, it's going to be a three-person tribunal who rules on this.
And with the FTAA, it would include all the countries in Central and South America who could become part of this. They would have something that was in equivalent to the Chapter 11 in NAFTA.
That's correct. There's currently, in one report, it details lawsuits against the governments of Canada, Mexico, and the United States. $15 billion in lawsuits. Just for Canada, it's $11 billion. So corporations are being granted this incredible power. And, you know, this is against these countries. I'd hate to see what it would look like for General Motors to sue a Uruguay or to sue a Bolivia or another country, one of the smaller countries. I mean, where the scale is just incredibly unfair. To give another example, a Canadian corporation who was in a long dispute with the city of Boston over some real estate lost consistently right up to the Supreme Court of the state of Massachusetts. Lost again in the state Supreme Court, and has in effect appealed to this NAFTA tribunal. So where are our court systems? Where are our democratic processes?
Right. So once these trade agreements are in place, basically there is no control in terms of any individuals within any country making any changes or passing or even enforcing laws that are already in effect. So I'm still back to, how in the world do they justify fast track? Because that, in effect, gives, it's unprecedented, isn't it, authority. I mean, I've never heard of, and I'm not a political science person, but a major or anything, but I've never heard of that being used for any other kind of legislative.
Besides trade.
Right, besides trade. Has that ever been used for anything else that either of you are aware of?
I'm not sure. I mean, part of the rationale is they say that no country will do trade agreements with the United States unless the United States is able to say, here's what the deal is, and we know that this is what will pass, and we'll be able to negotiate with this hand, as opposed to saying, okay, you agree to this, this, and this, then we'll go back to Congress, and everything changes. So that's sort of the rationale, so that they're given more power to make trade agreements, and I think there's a certain amount of sense to that, but if the trade representative is negotiating away our living standards and our democratic rights, then it's, whoa, you know, that's not such a good thing.
And in fact, groups have tried to argue to include environmental and labor considerations in these actual trade agreements, but at best they seem to be, if at all, paper, just words on paper. I mean, there have been more mentions than anything that's truly enforceable. Is that correct?
That's right.
And has Bush ever met a trade agreement that he doesn't like? I mean, is there any chance that he's not going to pass any of this?
Right.
I mean, or any the next version or the next one after that?
So well, there's also, for instance, if we make treaties with governments, you know, in terms of various things, if it's a treaty, quote-unquote, then it's a two-thirds vote of the Senate, and there's a higher bar for it to be passed. And there's also a movement that these trade agreements should actually be considered treaties. They have that sort of power over our lives. You know, the rationale with treaties is we may go to war if, you know, another country's attacked and we have a treaty with them. You know, just like we see with NATO today, they're saying an injury to one is an injury to all. So all the countries of NATO are united with the United States in its current war with Afghanistan.
There's a lot of groups that have been organizing around this. The AFL-CIO union has been a large one, Public Citizen, and many others, environmental groups included. We didn't really touch much on the environmental issues today. But do you want to give us an idea, as we are going to need to be wrapping up soon, some of the actions or contacts?
Yeah, I think there's been a lot of people who have been extremely you know, outraged, especially that such a divisive issue as this is coming up at this moment, especially, you know. And there's the AFL-CIO is doing, mobilizing hundreds of members to make telephone calls to legislators, especially in states where this is very important, for instance, Connecticut, California, Florida, Arizona, Alabama. There's been rallies, for instance, in Connecticut, there's been rallies in front of congressional offices, there's been rallies in front of plants saying we don't want a trade agreement that's going to shut our plant down at Amabel in New Vernon, Connecticut. The coalition includes, you know, the Sierra Club, labor councils, the Latin American Justice Council, the National Organization of Women, Greens, American Field Service Committee, United for a Fair Economy, as well as Public Citizen, have been doing a great deal of work. People are encouraged to contact your representatives. We're fortunate in the state of Maine in that both Congressmen Baldacci and Allen have come out against Fast Track. And it's very important that people also contact Senators Snow and Collins and let them, you know that they don't support it, and to urge them to talk to their party leadership, the Republican Party, which is initiating this, and have them withdraw it at this time in our country's history. We think it's very inappropriate. So for Senator Snow, the telephone number is 945-0432. And for Senator Collins, the telephone number is 945-0417.
Great. Thank you so much for joining us here today.
Thank you.
Jack McKay.
Things are gonna get worse. It's gonna follow us all around like a curse. The more you make, the more you spend, and the more knees are starting to bend. You're a fat cat now, but the dogs are starting to feed. Tell me, how much more of this do you really need? Things are gonna get wild. Gone are the days of the meek and mild. The more you give, the more they take, until your back is about to break. And you come to blows and your nose is starting to bleed. Tell me, how much more of this do you really need?
You just don't quit till you get it all. And the whole damn world is falling right down on its knees. Tell me how much more of this do you really need? Things are gonna get bad. We're gonna bury the best friend that we ever had. All in the name of a privileged few. All in the interest of me and you. And we all got a part in the doing of the dirty deed. Tell me how much more of this do you really need? Things are gonna get hard. Ain't nobody gonna get away unscarred. It's all waiting on me and you. Better say your prayers, pay your dues. Been a long time coming and a long time sowing the seeds. Tell me how much more of this do you really need? Things are gonna get worse. It's gonna follow us all around like a curse. The more you make, the more you spend. And the moon is starting to bend. You're a fat cat now, but the dog's starting to be. Tell me how much more of this do you really need? Tell me how much more of this do you really need? Tell me how much more of this do you really need?
How Much More by Dave Mallett. You've been listening to Radioactive, a grassroots environmental and social justice news journal. I'm Amy Brown. We'd like to thank Joel Mann for engineering today, Andy Buckley for web support, Andrea DeFrancesco for suggesting a song, and you for listening and acting. You can reach us here at the station or by emailing radioactivenews@hotmail.com. You can hear archived Radioactive programs by following the links at www.maine.indymedia.org. Please join us again next Thursday and stay tuned for Free Speech Radio News, then Democracy Now! In Exile.